The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll, and today it's the return of the classic album clash. First of all, a few months ago it was Metallica, Ride the Lightning versus Master Puppets. Now it's Nirvana, Nevermind versus In Utero. And returning to Talk is Jericho, before he even returns to the WWE, Big Cass is here to weigh in on the classic album clash, giving his two cents on Nevermind versus In Utero. He brought along his friend Rob, who's a trainer for a lot of the WWE guys. He's John Cena's personal trainer. Interesting discussion, because all of you know I was not a huge Nirvana fan when they first hit the music scene in the early 90s. I kind of hated them almost for what they did to metal, but Rob and Big Cass were both fans, explained why they were instant Nirvana fans the first time they heard them, or Nirvana, if you're from Canada. Cobain used to point that out, that Canada was the only country in the world who pronounced the name of the band Nirvana. Drama, pasta, auntie, that's how we talk, get used to it. Also, Big Rob is 40, Big Cass in his early 30s, I'm 47, so we got a great generational debate going on as well about the cultural impact of Nirvana and their music. We break down both albums in the classic album clash style, track by track, talk about the iconic cover artwork. Here's some great trivia about the making of both Nirvana albums, and of course, you too can let us know what you think. Nevermind versus In Utero, which one do you like better? Just tweet your vote for which one at Talk is Jericho. But then, in the meantime, in the between time, we're ready to rock it right now. It's the return of the classic album clash, In Utero versus Nevermind, Nirvana, right here on Talk is Jericho.
All right, so the classic album clash, one of the biggest hits in podcast history, at least in my own mind. And it's funny because everyone wants to get involved now after we've done a few of them. And Big Cass called me a while ago and wanted to do a podcast about music, right? Because you're a big music guy.
This is correct. And I was a little jealous that when Sami Zayn came on and you
the
guys...
The Beatles one,
the
yeah.
The Beatles podcast.
With Charlie from Anthrax.
Yes.
So you wanted to get involved. So I said, well, I got two choices. One is the search for the perfect album, which is really hard. And then the classic album clash.
Yeah.
You had brought up Nirvana.
Yeah.
And I said, well, we need a third. And then you brought Rob's name in here, who is the one of the trainers for the WWE as far as... You don't work for the WWE, but all the people come to you to work out with you in the gym, right?
Yeah, I work for myself, and it just so happens that a lot of WWE want to show up. So
there you go, right. You know, so we're all in the same wavelength here, all strapping young lads. what we chose was Nirvana.
Yeah.
Nevermind versus In Utero, and which we'll delve into. And at first, I remember you were saying, like, oh, there's not even any... any comparison between the two?
Yeah, at first glance, especially because Nevermind, it had an impact on me when I was younger. I thought it was just a slaughter looking at these two. I was like, they don't even compare. Like, Nevermind to me is a juggernaut. Like, it's just, you know,
almost a perfect album. That's one
yes.
that we talked about.
Yeah.
I think there's one or two songs that didn't make snuff, but it's pretty close to a perfect album.
Almost a perfect album. So I was like, there's nothing that could even touch it. But then at second glance, looking at In Utero, there's some really, really good stuff on there that I maybe overlooked at first. So it's way closer of a debate than I thought it was.
Think.
Yeah.
So Rob, I think we're probably around, I don't know, how old are you?
40.
Okay, so I'm 47, you're...
30.
30. So you got three kind of generations of Nirvana. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about Nirvana and the impact of Nirvana, because here's another thing that it just kind of hit me as I was looking into this and listening to the tunes, is that Nirvana's only got three records. And two of them, you know, one was kind of an indie release in Bleach, but only two records, and to have that much influence, it's almost like the Sex Pistols that only have one album.
I was just going to say that.
Right? And Nirvana has two. Like, talk about how much of an influence they are, though, just on music in general, Rob.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, that era, you know, you could say the transition from, like, the hair metal kind of era to, like, I personally, just being a music nerd, I hate the term grunge. It was just a different kind of rock.
Right.
And I think Nirvana would have agreed. But, mm-hmm. Like, I remember, you know, being, that was my prime teenage years for music. And I remember seeing their video, I think on Headbangers Ball or something. It must have been like a round-went premiere because no one had heard of Nirvana. And going around asking my friends, like, have you heard of this band? This track was really good. And getting the album for, like, I had 2 weeks to be ahead of everyone and be like, seriously, this album's really good. You should check out this band. And then all of a sudden, it was
Juggernaut
everywhere.
Blows yeah. up, right? How did you first hear Nirvana, Casp?
When I was very, very young, I guess just friends of mine would be playing Nirvana, and it Smells Like Teen Spirit. Like, that was always like, if you're trying to get a band together in grammar school, like, if you, that was the first track everybody tried to play, was Smells Like Teen Spirit. But I didn't really delve into Nevermind until my sophomore year of high school. I had a buddy of mine that I used to hang out with. His name was Sean Brady, if he's out there listening. Shout out to Sean Brady. he played the album for me, and I was like, you got to give me this CD. So I borrowed the CD from him, and I don't think I've ever given it back. But when he gave me the CD, I must have listened to that thing cover to cover four times a day. I was, like, in love with that album, Nevermind. So I didn't really get into them that much till high school. But when I was much younger, yeah, Smells Like Teen Spirit was, like, the song that everybody knew.
Well, it's funny, and you kind of mentioned it, Rob. For me, I was a big metal guy, and not a hair. Like, you know, I like Poison and bands like that, but it wasn't about that for me. It was about Iron Maiden and Metallica and, you know, Ozzy and Anthrax and those type of bands. So when Nirvana came out, it was kind of the end of that era of the classic time for those bands. I mean, Metallica survived in Guns N' Roses, but, like, Iron Maiden did not do good, and Helloween did not do good, and Ozzy and Scorpions and those type of bands. So I hated Nirvana, even though by age, like in 91 when it came out, I was 20 years old. That's the perfect age to be a Nirvana fan, like feel the angst and the energy and the power. But I totally ignored it and denied it because I was such a metal guy. So I didn't get into Nirvana till about 10 years ago, going back into it because I had such a hard-on for them for basically killing off my favorite bands.
I think, but the fact that you did get into them, I always think about this with huge popular bands that are good musicians. You can't deny that guy could write some hooks. Like, even
absolutely,
like, you could love it or hate it. If you listen to it objectively, like, okay, that's the third song in a row that you can sing along to. You know, that's
musical genius.
Yeah,
as far as songwriter, yeah. You know. But I was the same way even with Van Halen when Sammy Hagar joined the band. I didn't listen to 5150 until 1995. It came out in 85 because I was so pissed off that Roth left the band. But you listen back to it now, and like we said, I mean, there's no doubt about it that Cobain was the, if you want to call it grunge, was the president of that movement.
Right.
The number one influence in making that into what it was.
And he didn't want to be, which was interesting.
Right. He didn't want to be, which is where all the rebellion came from, and why there's such a switch between Nevermind and In Utero, which we'll talk about. But and you think about it, like, just the way that he changed. Like, I always say, like, there's certain bands that change culture and change society. You had Elvis, which bled into the Beatles. Everyone starts to dress like the Beatles. And then suddenly, you know, everyone starts to sound like Zeppelin. And then it turns to, you know, maybe mid-70s, late 70s, Van Halen. Then it goes to, you know, the Guns N' Roses. Then it goes to Nirvana. And that was kind of the end of it. Then it turned into rap and those sort of thing. But people were wearing what Cobain wore, changed their hair into what he wore. Kind of influenced everything.
Yeah, I think it's every generation needs their voice, you know. It doesn't matter. That's the interesting thing to me is, you know, you grow up whenever you're 13 to 18, whatever music you're hearing is going to be your music. And no matter how good it is, it can't be your kids' music, you know. And it's just, that's the way it works. And that it was just time. It was time for something different. And even as a kid, like I was into Metallica, Anthrax, all that stuff. Like that was the stuff I listened to. But with more mainstream rock, I felt as a kid, like I'm kind of tired of this. Like I remember having that. I remember watching Bullet Boys, Smooth Up In Ya.
Smooth Up In Ya.
Exactly. And I remember like the moment of being like, having this thought of like, I've seen this too much.
Yeah, good call, man.
And then a year later, that was Nirvana. And it was like, I think people were just looking, what can we grasp onto now? Or at least kids my age, you know?
It happens with every style of music in that you get one or two bands that are really good at something. So then everybody jumps on the bandwagon. And then they become so saturated and so kind of second rate stock that it needs to be purged, you know, that it's like it needs to be eradicated and start over with something new. Now, you never experienced that, Cass, because you were, you know, younger when all this went down.
Yep.
When you got into Nirvana, I mean, probably that was early 2000s or something along those lines.
2003, 2004.
What did you think of like the style of the band? Did it even make sense? Or did you...
I mean, I really dug them because I had listened to, you know, Pearl Jam, and but I was a classic rock guy, so... Nirvana was, you know me, Billy Joel, Bruce Springsteen. That's what I was raised on.
New Yorker.
Yeah, yeah. So when I get Nirvana and Pearl Jam and I started listening to those types of bands, it was like a whole different type of music to me. Because classic rock is, you know, very different from alternative or grunge or whatever you want to say it is. But when I started getting into Nirvana and Pearl Jam and stuff like that, it was just a different change of music. Because like even... in the late 90s, I started getting into like Eminem and hip hop and stuff of that sort. So I'd never really experienced alternative rock until like the early 2000s. And I was kind of hooked right from the get-go. I was just listening to nothing but alternative rock.
It's funny because, you know, I'm sure, have you been to Seattle, Rob?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so you've been there, Cass. Yep. Obviously, you've been there many times. We wrestle there all the time, the Key Arena. And I used to actually live in Vancouver, which is just up the road from Seattle. And you can tell, like, you know, what exactly is grunge? I asked Billy Corgan that once. He's like, well, we never thought of it as grunge. It was just basically trying to be Black Sabbath. And I think, you know, with Corgan, he wanted to be Black Sabbath. With Cobain, he wanted to be Black Sabbath combined with, like, the Melvins or the Buzzcocks or some kind of a punk band. But when you go to Seattle, it's a pretty depressing place. Like, it's always gray. It's like today. It's gray outside. It's cold. It's wet. That kind of bled into that sound for me. You know, you go up there and it's just like not a great place as far as, you know, weather wise.
It's always gloomy. You look at like a lot of towns we go to, especially in the South when it's warm, you open up the shades when you wake up in the morning in whatever hotel, Marriott, whatever. I'm a Marriott guy.
Okay.
And you get a good feeling when the sun's out. You're like, oh, I want to start my day, go to the gym, get some coffee. Man, I'm going to have a great day and go to the show. When Seattle, you open up those shades, it's like, oh man, this place.
I'm gonna go back to bed.
Yeah,
it's the opposite of LA. Like,
well, exactly. And it's funny too. Like, even just the style, like, it just popped in my head as we're talking. So, like, who's the grunge guy in the WWE? Well, it's Daniel Bryan. The way he dresses, his hair. He could be in Nirvana. Where's he from? Like Yakima, Washington, or something like that.
Aberdeen.
Sorry,
that's from.
He's from the same city.
Yeah, yes.
He has that vibe, just kind of a weird, creepy guy, you know, in the best possible way. But, you know, hair is just hippie, plaid shirts, cords. Yeah. That's Cobain. That's Nirvana.
I think it's like, I love that you mentioned the Sex Pistols, because that's the way I think of, like that. I didn't get into, I'm not super into the Sex Pistols, but I didn't even listen to their album for a long time. And then when I did, it reminded me of Nevermind, kind of, with like, hey, these are all catchy punk tunes. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what Nevermind is. And I remember reading one time that Cobain said he wanted to be like Zeppelin, with you can have something that rocks out and then you can have like a stupid hippie song. I think a stupid hippie song to him was like Polly, which isn't really a hippie song. But it's really interesting because he, of more than any band I know, like those guys wore their influences on their sleeve so much, they would, on the Unplugged set, they played a lot of their influences instead of their own tracks, you know?
Yeah, I was going to mention that too. I think when that was kind of all the rage in the mid-90s of doing the Unplugged, and there was a lot of good ones. I mean, Kiss Unplugged is great, and Rod Stewart is great, but the Nirvana one, to me is the best one because nobody expected it. But when you listen to both these albums, so many of those songs are basically like, you know, the best songs are ones you can play acoustically just by yourself, by a campfire. And they lend themselves to that treatment so well. Like yeah. you mentioned Polly or Penny Royal T or Dumb, Come As You Are. It's like they're so just dark, like tales that you would have some medieval, you know, yeah. guy playing on a lute by the fire on Game of Thrones or something along those lines.
The Unplugged, especially the final track, Where Did You Sleep Last
oh,
Night?
Oh, man.
You can like hear the pain in yeah. Kurt Cobain's voice. You can like feel it. You can feel his pain. And then you, if you do your research, you find out that shortly after the unfortunate incident with him where
he killed himself. That's right.
And then you listen back to Where Did You Sleep Last Night? You're like, yeah, that makes sense. Like you can hear it in his voice. Like there's something inside of him that he brings out in his music and his performances that just you could feel what's going on with him.
His vocal too, like it's not the best vocal as far as range, but as far as feel, like he reminds me a lot of John Lennon in his yeah. vocal stylings. It's not technically great, but the emotion and the power, it's so raw. It's very memorable and very, you feel it.
Yeah, it's like his throat's full of razor blades at times.
Yes.
And then when he's actually singing, like his, Lennon's a great example. Like he could find melody, like the perfect melody, so
right.
easy it seemed like, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of like you mentioned before. And actually I read something where Dave Grohl was saying that Cobain told him that music and melody first, lyrics second. Yeah. It's like we don't really care about the lyrics. It's all about, you know, what kind of a vibe are you singing about and what's the tone that you're working on, you know?
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
So let's get into the two records. So Nevermind was released September 24th, 1991, which, like we said, you can almost remember the day that it came out because for me, I was in Canada, and Much Music was the big video. It wasn't MTV. We had Much yeah. Music, which is so lame. But I remember, like you said, Smells Like Teen Spirit. The moment that came out, it's like, uh-oh, we're in trouble if you're a metal guy. But just so much power and passion in that opening, like, drum salvo and everything. I mean, it really is one of the most memorable songs from that time frame.
You're just quick off to the side, but I remember an interview with Warrant, I think with Janie Lane or something, like he said that they knew they were in trouble when they went into the record company, you know, after right
offices,
when
yeah.
the grunge movement was starting, and they looked around and it was three like Alice in Chains posters on the wall and nothing about them. And there's
yeah, he said when they went in there like a couple months before, there's a big Warrant poster on the wall.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when they came in the next time, it was a big Alice in Chains, and they're like, yeah, we're done. We're in trouble. But that's the thing. So, but another thing is that so for In Utero, it came out 2 years later, almost to the day, September 21st, 1993. So like I said, that there it's only 2 years, but there's a huge kind of a difference in this record. And I think I told you, Cass, that I had a little bit of a theory about this.
I can't wait to hear it. You kept it secret until now.
I got to save it for the show,
yeah.
kid. I got
yeah.
red light fever, baby. I'm a professional. So I think that, never mind, we mentioned how it's almost the perfect record, and every song is so catchy, and every song was so polished. And I think Cobain hated that. I think at the end of the day, when that record came out, it wasn't what he wanted. It was produced by Butch Vig, and it was actually mixed by a guy called Andy Wallace, who's one of the greatest mixers of all time, still works to this day. And when it was done, Kurt was not happy with how polished it sounded. I think the producer for the next record, For In Utero, a guy called Steve Albini, said that it sounded like Motley Crue with a fuzz box, which I'm sure Cobain was like mortified by. But I think that because Nevermind is so polished and so tight and so catchy, that his rebellious soul demanded that they go back to just this punk noise basically shit on a couple of tunes on In Utero. Yeah. You know? I mean, I think you said that you said yourself there's a couple stinkers on In Utero.
Well, in my opinion, In Utero's got five great songs, and the rest are all stinkers, in my opinion.
But the stinkers, it's not like they're throwing a dart and missing the mark. It's just like noise. Like just...
Lots of...
Like,
yeah. Exactly. Well, so just noise, and like even his singing. A lot. Even on Nevermind, there... I could say this, but more on In Utero, like when he's singing, I'm like, what are the lyrics? And then if I go look up the lyrics, I'm like, that's not what he said. Well, you can't even understand what he's saying. It's just a lot of noise and a lot of like screaming on In Utero, for sure. But yeah, there's five songs. I think they're all very, very catchy. And then the rest is just, like you said, noise.
I remember going to punk clubs when I was a kid, you know, kid, early 20s or whatever, and you'd walk into the club and it would just be like this barrage, this wall of guitars and just some guy just screaming. And that's what a lot of these songs sound like, but that's the environment that he came up in.
Yeah, I think, you know, that era that they came up in of punk, which would have been more like hardcore, you know, actually, Dave Grohl was in Scream, which was a hardcore band in DC. That was like one of the centers for them and for that genre, sorry. And that is tough music to listen to if you don't have kind of the trained ear.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty open to a lot of styles of music, and for some reason I'm not a huge death metal grindcore guy, but for whatever reason Napalm Death is one of my favorite bands, so I can I can filter out that stuff pretty good and appreciate the riff because I'm not a big lyric guy.
Well, and that's some total just scream your ass off with some crazy blast beats behind it.
But
it
does
right?
take, like, it takes a trained ear to kind of, you know, I watch other people listen to stuff like that. They'll hear even like Minor Threat or something. And they'll be like, oh, this is just noise. And then, okay, I've asked them, like, what are you listening to?
Mm-hmm.
And it's something I would never listen to. Like, oh, yeah, that would sound like noise, I guess. But with all that being said, I can even agree that with all the dissonance and all that I can listen to, there's a couple tracks that, you know, like, it's just not enough of a riff here to even make it, you know.
Right. I almost think, too, another thing I was going to say is that, I'm not going to say he tried to stiff it, but I think just from just the whole concept of who Kurt Cobain is and was, is that he wanted to go in there and piss the record company off. But I think even when he tried to stiff it, he still couldn't help himself but write these amazingly great tunes. And I remember one time I had a match against Kevin Nash. It was a hair versus hair match. And I was kind of pissed off because Nash never really did anything. And it left it all up to me all the time because we had a little bit of a series of stuff. And I went up to Pat Patterson, my mentor, basically everyone's mentor, kind of the Yoda of the WWE. And I was like, you know, Pat, this man, I'm just going to go out there and stiff it. I'm not going to talk to him about anything. I'm not going to say a word. I'm going to let him call the match. Just go out there and just have a shitty match. And he's like, you can't. Like, what do you mean? You can't. What do you mean? Like, I can't. Like, I'm not allowed to. He goes, no, you can't. You mentally can't allow yourself to have a bad match on purpose. You won't be able to do it. You're too good, or whatever he said. And I was thinking about In Utero and how Kurt was probably trying to piss some people off. But even by trying to piss them off, by having, like you said, the stinkers, he still couldn't help but write four or five songs that are maybe better than almost anything on Nevermind.
Yeah.
Thinking, oh, yeah, I'm going to show them. Well, what about Heart-Shaped Box? Well, yeah, well, there's other ones on there that shows them, you know?
Yeah.
He couldn't do it on purpose. It was just too good. Original title for Nevermind was called Sheep.
Yeah.
Which is kind of his commentary on the record company and on fans and that sort of thing.
I forget which album was it that he wanted to have a... I'm pretty sure there was one of them he originally wanted to name, like, I Hate Myself and Want to Die.
In Utero.
It was that. Yeah. That just shows you what Nevermind did to him.
I Hate Myself and Want to Die.
Something like that.
Yeah, and then they wouldn't let him use that. And the other title for that, which I really like, was Verse, Chorus, Verse.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool, right?
Yeah.
That was, you know, I'm not the biggest Nirvana expert or Cobain or anything like that, but the one thing I've noticed consistently in interviews I've heard is people say we see him, I think, because of his tragic end and all that, as this dark guy, but everyone talks about how funny he was. Mm-hmm. And they wish people knew his sense of humor.
Right.
But if you just listen to his songs and see interviews where he's either strung out or he doesn't want to deal with it. Well, this guy must be depressed all the time. But he wasn't. He seemed to have this sense of humor that, you know, I remember reading about the argument of making In Utero was a hate myself and whatnot.
Yeah.
Like, it took a while for, like, yeah, they might not get the joke. It was really just more about, like, the fans see you this way. You can't do it because they won't get it, you know?
They won't get the tongue-in-cheek part of it, right? But that's always, you hear that about people that kind of have that depression, that they're also really funny, you know, like a Robin Williams thing, or, you know, Chris Cornell, or those type of guys as well. It's kind of
some bipolarness.
Yeah,
something.
The escape mechanism to be really funny, you know? And you can see that because if you guys ever seen Nirvana live at the Reading Festival in England?
I've listened.
Is that where he comes out in a dress?
Yeah. Well, even better. It's this big festival.
No, wheelchair.
Yeah, he comes out in a wheelchair. They're headlining. He comes out in a wheelchair wearing a dress and a big wig. And this guy's like, he's trying his best. You know, he's trying his best. And he gets up out of the wheelchair and he starts singing The Rose, like by Bette Midler. You know, but really out of tune. They say love is like a flower. And then he falls down on his back. This is in front of like 60,000 people. They're the headliners. And then he wanders over to his guitar, plugs in, and they start playing Breed while he's wearing his wig and the frock. And they've got this one dude on stage, like the three of them, this one dude's just like dancing out of control. The whole song. I bet you he was like, yeah, just keep dancing, don't stop. And it's really weird and funny. It's really funny.
I couldn't imagine being there. Like, they're the headliner. If I'm a fan, it's like, here they come, Nirvana. Yeah! They're gonna rock this place. And then he comes out and does that. Like, what the hell is going on here?
A guy pushes him out in a wheelchair. And you can hear, like, it's like it gets really quiet. And then when he stands up and falls down, it's like no one knows what's going on.
I would be in shock. I'd be like, is he, what the hell, is he high? Like, what is going on here? I paid to see Nirvana.
Right. Yeah. Just the balls to do that.
Yeah.
Just to show the ultimate confidence. I'm like, yeah, here's my intro for the show.
And I think he is the ultimate example of, as you guys know, to varying degrees, fame is not what a lot of people expect.
Right.
And I don't think anyone expected. I remember reading one time, I might have the numbers wrong, but the record company thought Nevermind would sell a total of like 250,000 copies. And at one point, it was selling 400,000 a week.
Yeah. Like, you read that earlier. It did 50. They were earmarking it for 50,000.
Okay. Even better.
Yeah.
So, like, and then to be, he didn't ask to be the voice of a generation. He was told he was.
That's right.
And at that level, you can say, tell me, I'm just like you. Tell me how to lead my life. I can't do that. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. And then that, oh, I get it. You're right. I have to find it within myself. I'll do whatever you say. And like, no, like, just leave me alone.
It's like the people that committed suicide after Cobain committed suicide.
Right.
I mean, just like there's certain, like, for example, John Frusciante from the Red Hot Chili Peppers. He quit the band about, I don't know, 8 years ago. He's the genius of the Peppers in a lot of ways. All their best records, he's the guy. But he couldn't take it. And imagine if you were John Frusciante, but you're the lead singer and you're the poster boy for the grunge, quote unquote, movement. He couldn't take it, but he couldn't really quit. I mean, I guess he could have, but his way out was the final way out. But
and when you have that depression and everyone has a magnifying glass on you, like, you can't escape. Like, I can't imagine what that would be like. That's crazy. Like, what you guys do, I watch it. And I'm a pretty calm guy, but eventually the 80th person at dinner to come up to me to get an autograph, I'd probably snap. And you can't do that, you know?
It gets to you after a while, you know? I find that Cobain is kind of a very Axl Rose type of a character, although Axl wasn't the suicidal type, but very reclusive and maybe not really wanting to be around people too much, which kind of led to him being the way he was, and that was kind of his genius as a result of that, so. Let's get into the track by track here. It's The War Begins. Nevermind, Smells Like Teen Spirit, and In Utero, Serve the Servants.
This is a slaughter.
I mean, it really is.
Yeah,
right?
So one-sided. Like, Smells Like Teen Spirit, put them on the map. I mean, I wasn't, I don't remember back then, but like you guys were saying, like, put them on the map, like, changed music. So, like, how's any song going to go against that, especially Serve the Servants, which in my opinion is not a very good song.
Every band, if you're lucky, has the signature song
yeah.
that you're always going to be known for, whether it's Enter Sandman or Pour Some Sugar on Me or Stairway to Heaven or, you know, insert name here. It's Smells Like Teen Spirit for Nirvana all across the board. And I almost think that Serve the Servants, once again, was like Cobain's reaction was like, you know, I'm sure when they put out Smells Like Teen Spirit, had no idea it was going to be, like you said, the song of a generation, to whereas Serve the Servants, like, I'm going to do the opposite. I'm going to put like a real weak, I don't want to keep using the word stinker, but very, very stock.
It sounds almost purposely dissonant.
Bingo. You
know, when it starts.
I think it was put there on purpose to kind of be like, the new Nirvana song, what's it going to sound like? What?
Yeah, the first song. Can't wait to listen to it. Bang. Like the concert you said at the Reading right. Festival. Like everyone's like, they can't wait to hear the first track. And then they hear that. They're like, huh.
This is the new Nirvana?
Yeah.
This sucks. And he probably sat there howling like, oh, I did it.
The weird thing about that track to me is it makes me think of Jane's Addiction simply because of the line he says. The line "had a dad" at the time I had been into Jane's Addiction, so I think of Jane's Addiction's "Had a Dad" every time I hear that song.
They were big at that point in time, yeah. Right before that came out. Been caught stealing was a huge tune.
Again, like Nirvana opened the doors for alternative music,
right?
And there was a lot of bands, maybe not a lot, but like a growing between the Pixies, Jane's Addiction, all that. They weren't really getting the MTV play, but enough in the underground that it just needed something to kick the drawer open.
Yeah.
Okay, been caught stealing. Now we'll put everything on TV.
Right. Just go through from there.
Chili Peppers, even.
Okay, so then it's In Bloom up against Scentless Apprentice.
Again.
It's just a slaughter again. It's just, I don't know if there's anybody out there that could even debate this one.
Yeah,
for In Utero.
Unless you're some kind of a weirdo wearing a cardigan with greasy hair
that wants to be different.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I'm more intelligent than you.
It's obvious. Serve the Servants and Scentless Apprentice was Kurt's cry for freedom. Like, shut the fuck up. Right. I mean, even the point where In Bloom, I think, was even a single as well. Like it was the fourth single on the record. You know, but just that classic stuff. But Scentless Apprentice. I appreciate the, I don't know what you call that, an anomaly or an oxymoron or an alliteration of rhyming scheme, but it's pretty big stretch, you know, like a scentless apprentice. Like, what does that even mean, right? You know, I wonder if Grohl got, was Foo Fighters, was it stacked actors?
Yeah, something like that.
There you go. Probably got that from the scentless apprentice, so... then finally, we get a little bit of a fight.
Now it gets interesting.
Now it gets interesting.
Yes.
Where you got Come As You Are versus Heart-Shaped Box. Heart-Shaped Box, yeah. What do you think?
That's tough. You know, Heart-Shaped Box is kind of the, like Smells Like Teen Spirit, the definition of the Nirvana sound of the soft verse into the loud chorus, you know? And, in terms of those two, I personally would take Heart-Shaped Box, but I get it. I mean, Come As You Are is people. Actually, I think that's on the sign to Aberdeen now. The term Come As You Are. Yeah.
No kidding.
So that also highly associated with Nirvana for whatever reason. I mean, it's one of their biggest singles.
For sure. Right. What do you think, Cass?
I do really, really like Heart-Shaped Box, but I got to go with Come As You Are. Anytime I hear it, if I'm in the car, if it's on the radio, and you hear ding 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 ding, when you hear that, and like put that up, like bump that right now, just for me, that song, I don't know, that song is maybe second best song on that entire record.
Wow,
yeah, I really really like that song, but I can't, like, now it's interesting, so I can't like bury Heart-Shaped Box because that clearly is a great song, but. Maybe I'm just very biased towards Nevermind, but I have to go with Come As You Are here.
I remember, once again, just hating Nirvana and the concept of Nirvana. I remember it's like, oh, it's their one-hit wonder. They'll never have another hit. And at the time, I was working at a bar called Malarkey's. I was one of the bouncers, and on Thursday, they used to have this thing called Psychedelic Thursdays, and all the rockers would come, and it wasn't anything psychedelic about it. It was just all playing all the rock stuff. And I used to hang out back by the DJ because that way I wouldn't have to do anything, but I could just look at girls and drink. And I remember like I was like, yeah, we got the new Nirvana. I'm like, whatever. And then Come As You Are came on, and I was like, oh, shit. And they're not going to be a one-hit wonder. This is pretty damn good. Having said that, Heart-Shaped Box, I think had they opened the album with Heart Shaped Box, you'd have a more of a contender.
Yeah.
And I just, to me, the part of pain, meow, meow, da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na- weird deviation of wow. It's really, really cool, and I really dig that. So I'm going to go with Heart-Shaped Box.
Wow, I'm outnumbered here. This
one. Okay. And I think we have to mention, not many people know this, but Come As You Are, if anyone's familiar with the band Killing Joke, what's that track? Do you know it?
The only Killing Joke I know is the one Metallica covered, The Weight.
Anyone listening, they can figure this out, but it's very similar to Come As You Are to the point that...
Like the melody of it?
Yeah, I think Cobain was nervous about releasing it. And there was like talk of legal action that never came to fruition. Dave Grohl ended up playing with Killing Joke for at least a show.
Really?
And everything was okay. But that song is, the Killing Joke song is very close to, I can't remember. There's like two layers to it. And you're like, whatever. And then you put the Killing Joke song and you're like, oh shit, that's Come As You Are.
At least the melody.
You know?
Hit us up on the Twitter at Talk Is Jericho if you know what song Rob is referring to. Also too, you ever notice how like the greats... that like I've never heard of anybody else in the world with the last name of Cobain. I've never heard anybody else with the last name of Gretzky or Ulrich or Hetfield or it's weird to the Iserman.
Yeah, man, you know? There's someone coming into NXT, they should try Cobain. To get their name Cobain. That's wow, that'd be awesome great. Last name.
Colt Cobain. There you go. You can have that one. Anybody out there, you can have one. It's better than some of the crappy names they give you guys. So Colt Cobain, take it. Yeah, let's talk about the album covers quickly too here. Both very, very cool album covers. Which one would you choose first as the winner?
I think that Nirvana cover is iconic with the baby swimming and the dollar bill on the fish hook.
Like, yeah.
I believe that there was some controversy around that, and they were thinking that people would be offended by showing the baby like
well,
in full
penis too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that and I think Cobain wanted to put a sticker, no, not a sticker, but something over the baby's penis that said, if this offends you, then you're a closet pedophile or something like that.
Yeah,
yeah, something like that, because there was so much controversy around that,
right? They said that they were looking for, they wanted to do some kind of underwater birth.
Yeah.
So they went and looked at some underwater birth pictures and all very disgusting.
Yeah.
So they went to like a kiddie pool and took like four or five shots and like, hey, sign off on this. And if we use it, we use it.
Yeah.
And they wanted to do, edit out the wiener.
Yeah.
And then they're like, well, then he just looks like a baby boy with no wiener.
Yeah.
So leave the wiener on there. Put the sticker on there.
Yeah, it's a baby. You know, get over it.
But that's how people were so offended back in those times. Yeah. Like, he was just only 25 years ago.
Yeah.
But that was still a big deal. And the guy's name was Spencer Eldon.
Spencer Eldon.
Yes. And he recreated the album cover for the 10th, 17th, and 25th anniversary. And at the 25th anniversary shoot, he wanted to be nude, but the photographer insisted that he wears swim shorts. I guess it's not the same when you have like a 26-year-old guy.
Yeah.
Dong hanging. I will say this. Classic album cover, absolutely. But I bet you the In Utero, it'd be a very cool tattoo.
Oh, for sure.
I bet you there's a lot of people that have...
Tattoo-wise, In Utero wins easy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm sure there's probably some people with a tattoo of the baby.
Yeah, oh, for sure. But there has to be.
That'd be an interesting tattoo to have. Yeah. You go to the swimming pool, take your shirt off. People see that. What the hell's wrong with this guy?
Get the penis right. Make sure you get the penis right on it. So, I mean, I agree with you. Tattoo-wise, it's In Utero. Baby with a penis-wise, it's definitely Nevermind.
Yep.
Now, here's another good one. Track number four is Breed versus Rape Me.
Rape Me, certainly. Was that ever released as a single?
It was like a double single with All Apologies. It was kind of like a double-sided.
I like Breed, Territorial Pissings, which we'll get to, but like as a statement, Rape Me. As a wake up and jump around song, Breed.
Yeah. Well, just think about that too once again. I remember how it was controversial when Rape Me came out. Just think about that song title though. Rape Me.
Yeah, that is.
That's brutal. Like, we know it now because we've heard it for so long, but just think about that, like getting a record and seeing the back rape me.
Especially back then.
Right.
Yeah, I think they wanted to change it to Wait Me, which is such a stupid name.
Wait Me?
Something like they wanted, the record company didn't want Rape Me on the back of the cover, so they were going to change the song to
you
Wait Me.
You know what? I think I have a vague memory of like to get it into Walmart or something, right?
Yeah, that was it, yeah.
And I think they might have even printed that, but the lyrics are the same. Like, they didn't change the track, well,
why not call it Wake Me?
Wake, maybe that was what it was.
Wait Me?
Whatever, it was either Wake or Wait, whatever it was like, that
sounds
doesn't
like Yoda.
That doesn't even make sense.
After you wait me, you will. Like, what?
It might have been Wake Me, but I just know that they had to, like, change something, right, to get it to Walmart or Kmart, one of those two, to act for them to sell it. But song-wise, yeah, like, man, Breed, if I'm in the gym and I need a pick-me-up and I just put that on, that is definitely a pick-me-up song to work out to, anything before a match, something like that. But Rape Me is the better, in my opinion, the better song.
I agree with you on that. I'm going to go with Rape Me.
Yeah.
Statement-wise, chorus-wise, it's got my favorite thing about Nirvana, which is the dynamics of, like you mentioned, and Come As You Are and Lithium, which we'll talk about, but just kind of gets slow and heavy. But just the whole vibe of Rape Me, there's certain lyrics. Like, I'm more of a overall song and melody. You could sing, you know, Three Blind Mice, but if it's sung a proper way. But Rape Me, to me, was just so memorable and so dirty and so a cry for help. But I will say this, Breed, like you said, if I wanted just to rock out the first minute or so, it gets kind of a little bit stock after that. But I was listening to it today with one earbud in and one earbud out as I was driving my kids to school. And it's classic stereo recording, where if you just listen to the one side, all you hear is bass and drums. And that bass line's pretty badass. The guitar's on the other side.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of great bass playing in Nirvana.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. Like, I mean, this is a power trio we're talking about.
Right.
And they get a huge sound, and the bass line's so important. And he double tracks guitars, but a lot of times they don't compared to...
On Breed, there was only the single track, yeah.
And that bass line carries the entire song, like a little fuzz on it and everything. Yeah. But
Brown. He does a little bend on the note.
Yeah.
Brown.
And I have a thing for... I get, you know what, it kind of started in popular music around that era with Tool and other bands like that, but pushing the bass forward a little bit more, because there's really the redhead stepchild of all the instruments.
Well, but you just said a great point, though, too. It's a power trio. And if you're talking about, like, you know, the greatest power trios, whether it's Rush or Primus or any of those type of bands, the bass has to be a cream.
Yeah.
It has to be important. And no one talks a lot about Novoselic. Maybe it's because he didn't really do anything after, like, Dave Grohl did, but
yeah. The
guy's a great bass player. One thing I enjoyed about going back and listening to these two records to do this, kind of to get up to snuff, was just how good his playing is. And I don't think that's Cobain telling him, play this, this, and this. I think, here's the part, what do you got?
That's actually the same thing that jumped out at me last night when I was listening to these. Mm. I've more than once, like, wow, there he is again.
Yeah.
He's killing it.
Always, yeah. So... thumbs up to Christ Novoselic if you're listening to this, as I'm sure you aren't. all right, so next round of attack is Lithium versus Frances Farmer Will Have Her Revenge in Seattle.
Title-wise, well, I have to go to Frances Farmer.
Yeah.
But
yeah. What do you think, Cass?
I got to go with Lithium. Lithium is I'm pretty sure that was a single off that album. I mean, it's you hear that song, you think Nirvana, like, you know right away. You hear, like, the first, I don't know, 30 seconds of the song, you're like, Nirvana. You know the song, you know most of the lyrics. And Frances Farmer, that song just is very bad.
I don't think I'd ever heard that song up until we started listening to it. What do you think, Rob?
Lithium.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean.
Frances Farmer, it's not a bad tune. I mean, it's one of the better... quote unquote stinkers on the record.
Yeah.
But I mean, Lithium is just such a classic tune.
Yeah.
But I did a little bit of research. Frances Farmer was a famous actress from Seattle who was blackballed from the film industry after a series of mental collapses and a failed battle with alcoholism. And Kurt related Farmer's battles against her contracts with corporate Hollywood, with his difficulty with his record label, which he felt was holding him back and stifling his art, making him release poppy stuff he was never satisfied with. Also, he said that he really liked long song titles because the all the rage at the time was the one word titles like Plush and that sort of thing. Even Flow, for example. So he wanted to put out Frances Farmer Will Have Her Revenge on Seattle.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, you know, I at least there's a reason.
Yeah.
It doesn't make the song any better, but there's a reason. Now, here's another fighting back, though, from In Utero. So from Nevermind, we've got Polly. Polly want a cracker. And then we've got Dumb, Polly versus Dumb. Both of them appearing on the acoustic, on the Unplugged.
They're kind of identical songs. Yeah.
Polly's, that's a pretty heavy song, like subject wise, because I remember he read a story. The reason I know this, I remember as a kid reading about this, because you hear the lyrics and you're like, this sounds kind of fucked up. And then you read it and like, oh my God, it is. And it's like a 14-year-old that was kidnapped and raped and tortured or something like that. Gosh. Polly is the name he's using for like. That's if you read the lyrics now, knowing that, you're like, holy shit. Like,
I want to crack her because she's in a jail getting raped or something.
I think I should get off her first. Is that what he says?
Oh, wow.
I think she wants some water. Don't take out the blowtorch. Something like those are the lyrics.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. It's a little different spin.
I did not know
that. We're
not
laughing at the.
I did not know that story.
Didn't know that till right now. Now you're going over the lyrics.
Going over the lyrics. I'm like, wow, that's really demented.
Wow.
Yeah. I didn't know that. I've never known that that's what it was about. Like, now thinking of the lyrics, it's like. Pretty twisted song.
Just to put a little bit of a funny thing on it, Rob Halford from Judas Priest came out of the closet gay and put a different spin on all the lyrics that he wrote. Eat Me Alive.
Oh my God.
Jawbreaker. Grinder. And I ram it down. I said that to Rob. He goes, you couldn't tell from that? What's wrong with you, lad? Of course I was gay.
Yeah.
Eat Me Alive. Jeez. Takes away the heaviness of it, right?
Look at some Judas Priest albums at some point. Knowing
which
now.
Which is like you said, ram it down. So yeah, that takes away from the heaviness, and what we're knowing about Polly adds to the heaviness. But once again, though, which do you choose?
I go with Dumb here.
Dumb.
But, I mean, I really, really like the song Polly, but I have to go with Dumb here. And even both of them appearing on the Unplugged, Dumb on Unplugged is better also. I just...
choosing Dumb as well or Polly?
Yeah, I think so. Although I'm always impressed with just acoustic guitar and singing, you know, and you can...
You know what I noticed about Dumb, not to interrupt you, Rob, but I heard it on the Unplugged, but it's actually on the record too. There's kind of like an organ grinder in the background. I think it's like, I can't remember, it's a calliope, however you pronounce that. It's the same thing that you hear for the benefit of Mr. Kite, like a circus
when they say,
kind of piano.
Is that what they play when he said, I think I'm just happy. Yeah.
I think that's a cello.
There's a violin in there as well, but it might be a cello, but it sounds like one of those. It's an old circus instrument.
I'll have to listen to it again.
It used to turn it. It was like an organ grinder, and it used to have the guy with the monkey would dance, and you'd play this kind of a weird. There's something weird going on, and I think on Unplugged it is a cello. And it might be a cello, but to me it's going to be a calliope, however the hell you pronounce it. So.
Now I'm going to picture that whenever I listen to it.
Yeah, I'm choosing Dumb as well, especially with this very serious take on Polly, which completely changed the song for me, because I thought it was Lily Cobain, maybe had a pet parrot, was just looking at it, and wrote this really cool song about
his parrot. I hope I'm right, and that's not some weird memory of a teenage me, but I'm pretty sure that's correct.
Okay, then we go to side two. Back in the days when there actually were sides, kids, go check out your old albums and cassettes. There was actually two sides and not just one long stream that you get for free, you sons of bitches. Territorial Pissings versus Very Ape. Okay, so first of all, Territorial Pissings with the intro of the out of tune, come on people now, shine on your brother, which is awesome. But where are you going with this one, Rob?
I loved, I remember an early live performance of Nirvana. Teen Spirit was all the rage, and they instead played Territorial Pissings. Mm. I remember seeing that as a kid and thinking, okay, I get these guys. Like, that's on purpose because that's not nearly as catchy of a tune, but I love that. You know, I love having the balls to
it's
do
very
that.
Punk rock to do that. Yeah.
You know, and again, great bass line that kind of drives the whole thing.
I love the snare drum too. It's like 20 seconds.
That's a very Dave Grohl-esque.
Grohl's insane too. Like you forget, as well with, you know, obviously Foo Fighters is so catchy, and he's such a good songwriter and guitar player, but he's an amazing drummer, man. He has so much energy.
One of the most, it's so simple. Yeah. It's so simple that I don't play the drums well, but I play the drums. But I would never think that simple. Like, that's why it's genius. It's kind of like an AC/DC riff.
Right.
You know, and he's the most musical drummer I think I've ever heard, where everything's like that. The drum fill, just the snare roll before Smells Like Teen Spirit. You could just hear the
classic.
Drums.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, and everything builds it up. Like, every time you hear it, you know what's happening. Yeah. And like, it's not just that track. It's a lot of tracks. And that's why he's Dave Grohl, I guess.
Right.
I think we were talking about this maybe a few weeks ago, at just how talented he is when it comes to drumming. But like, he only did what was appropriate for the songs, right, and for the betterment of the songs on the album. Like, he never, quote unquote, and like in wrestling, tried to get his shit in.
No, you're right. And that's what I always say about Ringo Starr, people bagging his drums. But that guy was the perfect drummer of playing the best part of what fit the song.
Right. Yes.
And Grohl is definitely in that vein. So is Lars Ulrich nowadays, too. Very focused in on how does this make the song better rather than me getting my shit in.
Yeah.
Exactly. Right. Who do you choose, or which do you choose?
I think Territorial Pissing. Again, it, like Breed, that's a song that that I could put on and really kind of get in the right frame of mind, whether it's working out, whatever you need to do to get up, you know, like a cup of coffee for some people. That song, like for me, like could, again, get me up if I need to get up for a workout or whatnot. And I don't know, Very Ape to me, I just don't like that. I just don't think it's a good song. Again, I'm not going to use that S word again that we keep using, but it's just not a very good song.
I don't mind Very Ape as a, I think it's a good song.
Yeah.
Like, but it's not as good as Territorial Pissings. I do like the line. What is it? So, don't hesitate to ask. If you ever need whatever, don't hesitate to ask someone else first.
Yeah, right.
Whatever
right.
it is.
If you need anything, don't hesitate to ask somebody else. I'm going to go the other rant here. This is one of the ones that, like I said, kind of getting back into In Utero, because I don't know the last time I listened to this album straight through. And I have my little notes here, and I actually have Territorial Pissings circled, but this morning I listened to Ape 4 times in a row. Wow. And really discovered, like, I love this song. It's a weird little minute and a half, just very, very punky, cool tune, and I'd never really discovered it, so I'm going to go with Very Ape. Wow. Even though every time I take my dogs out to go to the bathroom, I always, no joke, when they go to the tree, I always think, oh, there's a Territorial Pissing right there. I've learned something from Kurt Cobain and his lyrics, but I'm going to give the edge to Very Ape. Although, you know, 2 weeks from now, I might slap myself in the face and wonder what the hell I was
thinking
about.
And I do like the subtle guitar when it just goes up the note.
Yes. You know, like, that got me too. There's some really
It's a weird thing, but it's.
But it really is memorable. So Very Ape wins for me. Okay, so the next one is Nevermind was Drain You. Not to be confused with Rape Me. Drain You and Milk It. I'm just going to go right here. Milk It's just the shit. That's one of those ones, like I said, you walk into the punk rock club and it's just this wall of noise of some dude just screaming and people just slam dancing for no apparent reason.
It's the Uber stinker.
Okay, so would you say is that the worst track on the album?
I would say it's the worst track that maybe Nirvana has. For me.
Wow.
But there might be something on Bleach, but I can't recall anything that jumps off. I mean, maybe I'm missing something. I'm sure there's people that think Milk It's the best, and that's fine. But to me, listening to these two 12-track records, if I had to list from 1 to 24, Milk It would be at the bottom for sure. What do you think, Rob?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not... Again, I can handle a lot of that stuff, but I'm not a huge fan of Milk It.
Yeah, because you can handle all that stuff when it's got some vibe to it and something about it. And some of it has a hook.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some Cannibal Corpse songs that have a hook.
Yeah.
This one does not.
I'm going to go with Drain You also. And I especially like Drain You because there's a point in time, it's got to be 2-3 minutes. It's like it's somewhere in between 2 and 3 minutes into the song where they bring it down. Mm-hmm. It's very, very low. And then they build it back up.
Yeah,
and it's Cobain just screaming. And then they get back into it. That, I don't know. That point in the song, it just always gets me up. I like the song, and that point in the song, every time I listen to that album, always gets me in the right mood.
Well, and the live at Reading we talked about, after they play Breed, the second song in the set is Drain You. So it definitely has that high energy where they want to put it on early.
And I think I read that song was written about Courtney Love, or No, it was written about his ex before Courtney Love.
Draining him.
Yeah, and like the first line is one baby to another says, "I'm lucky to have met you," or something like that. Mm. And I think that's something that she said to him early on in their relationship.
I'm remembering he wrote a number of songs about her.
Yes,
like that, right?
A lot of the songs off Nevermind were about their relationship.
Really?
Yeah, and it's just about her and how she just drained him mentally. And when I believe that's correct, I think.
Mentioning Courtney Love, I was reading about when they were recording In Utero, and they got this kind of really big indie producer called Steve Albini, who was just... I guess he was the exact opposite of what Butch Vig was. He wanted to make a punk rock record and, you know, that sort of a thing. And the deal was they're in Minnesota somewhere in the snow, and the only people in the session were the three guys, Steve and his engineer. And at one point, Courtney showed up because she missed him, and I guess she just berated everybody. She was, like, insulting Cobain and his...
The modern Yoko.
Yeah. And they're like, I guess they said that when she left, he just sat in the corner for like 3 days and couldn't do anything because he just mentally killed him.
That's always a recipe for success, just berating somebody,
right.
Your partner.
When it's creating.
Yeah.
Jeez. Yeah, exactly.
So. I think we should briefly mention that these two albums, it's a good look at the influence producers can have on a sound. And that is Albini's sound, like very raw and big.
Yes.
And
that's why they went with him, because they didn't want the Motley Crue with the fuzz box production that they had on Nevermind.
And there's a letter that circulated that he wrote, like he was hesitant to take them. It's kind of an interesting read.
Right.
Like, I'm not going to take percentage points.
Yeah.
Just, you know, flat rate. It's kind of like,
he refused to take.
He's almost combative,
the record,
but like, if you want to work, then I'm your guy. If not, don't.
He said, just in doing some reading, that he almost felt bad for them. Because he said they were just like another marginal band, like all the other ones that he worked with, which is like the Pixies and the Breeders. He's like, yeah, they're all suck, you know. And then you have a producer who feels that way. It's like, eesh.
There's an instrumental band I'm a huge fan of called Don Caballero. And they went to Albini. It's the same type of sound. Like when they went to him, much more raw. The drums are very big open. Sounds like they just put one mic on the drum kit. Mm-hmm. Really, there's probably 40, but you know.
Yeah. Next battle is Lounge Act versus Penny Royal Tea. What do you think, Cass?
I go Penny Royal Tea. I do really like the song Lounge Act, but Penny Royal Tea to me is just by far a superior song. That's one of the I'd say that's one of the good songs off of In Utero. In my opinion,
I felt Penny Royal Tea, like especially once again on the acoustic record, really came alive.
Yep,
and it's really good, and that's why I was kind of thinking that Paulie was maybe just about a parrot while he's drinking his Penny Royal Tea, and it's like, what can I write about? Oh, I'm going to write about this tea bag or something like that, and just creates this beautiful, you know, masterpiece written about a cup of tea. But once again, Lounge Act, great bass line. It's a little bit more pedestrian, a little bit more straight ahead, whereas I think Penny Royal Tea has that Cobain fairy dust that makes it special for me.
I went through both a Penny Royal and Lounge Act phase, so... In a weird way, I will admit, and I would see how most people would use Penny Royal Tea, but I'm going to give these a tie just on a personal level, because I remember listening to Lounge Act like over and over, and Penny Royal Tea. So,
it's like, how's Rob doing? Oh, he's going through his Lounge Act phase,
which is probably 3 days or something.
Then we got a Stay Away, which to me is the one that keeps Nevermind from being a perfect record.
Wow.
Versus Radio Friendly Unit Shifter. And I'll start with this one. I'm going to take Radio Friendly Unit Shifter just because of the title, which I thought was great. And when I was a kid, and even to this day, I always, when I get a new record, I decide on what songs I like just by reading the song titles alone. And when I see the song titles, I'm like, oh, I'm going to like that song. Even if it has to be a real S word for me not to like it. And going head to head, like I said, Stay Away, it's good, but I just like Radio Friendly Unit Shifter. And I actually do kind of dig the song as well. It's a little bit quirky, it's weird. And it's the other side of Cobain that I can dig at times. So I'm going Radio Friendly Unit Shifter.
I'm going to go Stay Away. I do agree. It's definitely the weakest song by far on that album.
I
but
like a B.
Yeah.
B minus.
Give it a B, B minus. It's not an A minus for a perfect album, but it is kind of just noise, but I think there's more to it than that. If there was a song on that album that was kind of just noise, like we were saying, that's the one. But I still like that song. Like I said before, I'm very biased towards Nevermind, just because I've listened to it cover to cover probably hundreds of times. So I'm going with Stay Away.
Rob?
Huge points for the title, Radio Friendly. I mean, what, you can't get more punk rock than that.
We needed a hit. There you go.
Yeah.
There's your hit.
Here's your Radio Friendly Unishifter. I think I'll take that one. Again, great bass line and Stay Away. But it does, to me, sound like if there's any filler on that album, there's not that it's a bad song, but it does lack some heart that other songs on that album don't have.
It's like I said, when we did the perfect album search with the Avenged guys, that was the one song that kind of eliminated this one from contention for me. But and then we go to one that's definitely in contention for being just a great tune, which of course is On a Plane. And that's not a plane like an airplane. That's a plane like a empty field, like where I come from in Canada, versus Tourette's. Once again, Tourette's to me is just a little bit of a filler track of Cobain just basically f***ing around with a minute and a half, you know, punk rock song. So On a Plane also translates great on the Unplugged. And I really dig that song, so I'm taking On a Plane.
Also On a Plane, for sure. Tourette's is not every time I listen to the In Utero through, I'd say that's a song that I might skip over just to get to the final track, which is maybe the best track on the album.
The best thing about Tourette's is it's 1 minute and 30 seconds.
Yeah. So I can't even make it through.
If you have to go take a leak ski, you'll be okay on that one.
Yeah.
I would take On a Plane as well. I really like that song.
Yeah.
Although I will say Tourette's, for some reason, isn't as bad of a stinker as some tracks on there. That's a classic, just a hardcore riff.
Yeah, it's you a know? Rock song.
And I think I said this to Cass the other day. Like, you know, I get this if it was live. If you're half drunk, jumping around, and that energy came on for a minute and a half. Like, I could see that. But when you're listening to it in context of, like, that comes on... if you heard some Nirvana hits, then that came on. It throws you, you know?
Yeah, if it was live, it was like a Ramones type thing. Like, 1, 2, 3, 4, and they just go through. Yeah. Like, that's cool. Whatever, yeah. And then basically what you just said, Cass, a couple minutes ago, the album closers of Something in the Way for Nevermind and All Apologies for In Utero.
So All Apologies might be the best song on In Utero, but I don't know why. Something in the Way is my favorite Nirvana song of all time.
Wow.
Yes. My You're favorite Nirvana song ever.
That's awesome.
Once again, both of them on the Unplugged set.
Yes. And the Something in the Way on the Unplugged set is unbelievable.
Interesting.
It's my favorite. I don't know why. I think there has to be a violin in there? Like, there's some instrument in there that they throw in there.
Cello.
It's a cello again. Yeah. That song, for some reason, I don't know, just gets to me. Love that song.
And once again, just thinking of the genius of Kurt Cobain and how we're mentioning, oh, he's got Milk It and Territory Pistons, but then the guy will go and get a cellist to play in a song. And that's why I think, and I don't know this for sure because I don't know the history of Cobain, but there has to be some kind of a Beatles influence on him, as there is in almost every musician. But that's a very Beatley thing to do. Eleanor Rigby just put some strings
in
there.
I like that Beatley thing to do.
Yeah.
I'm going to start using that.
It's a very Beatley thing to do. What do you think, Rob?
That's tough because I'm a fan of down-tuned guitars.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe, I don't play guitar or anything, but I think Something in the Way is in C, which I really like for some reason. There's a guy that you've done some stuff with, I think, Devin Townsend.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff in C.
We won a Juno together, which is a Canadian Grammy.
I only discovered that guy a couple years ago. He's
great.
Something
else. He's not for everyone, but if you dig him, he is a genius of geniuses.
He's all over the place.
Yeah,
it's great.
For sure.
Anyways, I love the sound. I love when you can take two notes and make a song.
Right.
You know, and it's so simple. And I heard a cool story that to get the sound, it wasn't working right. And it ended up, maybe this isn't true, just a rumor, but Cobain lying on the floor, him starting to play it, and Butch Vig running over with a microphone.
It's just Something in the Way.
Yeah. And that, I love that just kind of like in the moment type stuff. You know, obviously they added stuff to it.
Yeah.
And, but in the end, I have to go with All Apologies because it's All Apologies. I think it's a better song, but I get it because there's something about Something in the Way that is really cool and simple.
I'm going to go with All Apologies. I think it's one of my top five Nirvana songs, maybe even top three. And once again, you know, we keep referencing this over and over again, but it was just, it was so perfect for the acoustic set. And I also love, like, these days, in this day and age, when you do a record, you stack it. I mean, you put your best songs on in the first three or four or five tracks, because most people are skipping and they're streaming and they're moving. To put what could be, like you said, the best song on the record last, it's like this nice little treasure that you find where you go through the whole record. Like you said, there's some good ones and there's some that are okay, but then this amazing riff, like, wow, I would never have quote unquote wasted that at the end of the record. I would have put it on first, but the fact that Serve the Servants is first and All Apologies last, once again, fits my theory that Cobain just wanted to fuck with the record
company.
Kind
of a big F you.
Yeah, and wanted to fuck with people who were jumping on the bandwagon of what Nirvana was at that time, which was basically all the college kids and high school kids. You know, that was the in thing.
Yeah.
So I'll go with All Apologies for that reason. Although, like you said, Something in the Way, like, I don't smoke weed, but if I did, it'd be the type of song I would want to have a big fat one and just like very, it's very Floyd-y, white album.
Yeah.
You know, scarce.
Relaxing.
You know, speaking of that, it's like, you said Floyd-y. What's that track off? Is it The Wall? Goodbye, Cruel World.
Yeah.
Very similar. You know, there's like the two notes on the bass.
Yeah, there's a song called Long, Long, Long on the White Album. It's a George song. It's the same thing. It's very, when I was a kid, it was very boring, but you listen to it now, it's so deep, and it's just, it's almost like a song you would write just as you're about to go to sleep or just as you're about to wake up from sleep. And Something in the Way is like that as well. Yeah. So there you go. You got the In Utero lineup and the Nevermind lineup. I mean, I think it's pretty obvious which is the quote-unquote better record.
Yeah.
But I'll say this from kind of, once again, going into it. In Utero's a lot, I'm not going to say a lot better because it's a great album, but it's a lot deeper than I originally remember it to be. Do you disagree with that?
I agree. I think you're right. I do remember something about Cobain saying that lyrics weren't as important to him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we were rolling when you said that, but he did say it, Cass. And
wait, was that you that said that? Was it me? You?
Yeah. I said that I'd read that Dave Grohl said that
about Cobain.
He had learned from Cobain.
Now I'm just putting words in people's mouth. But I think that might have been true for Nevermind, but there seemed to be a lot of personal stuff on In Your, or more personal, I should say.
As he was kind of spiraling towards the end for himself.
Yeah. Nevermind, like you said, almost the perfect album. Stay Away is that one, and even Abbey Road has Sun King, according to Sami Zayn. Because I brought up the perfect album thing to Sami Zayn, and I was frustrated because everything I threw at you, like even Thriller, you came back. Baby
Be Mine.
Be Mine is no. I was so mad. I was like, he's so stint. He's just not giving me anything. And he was like, hey, man, I don't think you're going to find one. He goes, even Abbey Road's got Sun King.
You know, I listened to a few tracks on In Utero with someone, and she said, she's not as familiar with Nirvana, but she said, like, oh, this is Nirvana. It doesn't even sound like them. Mm. And I thought that kind of said a lot as to what
good call
a average music listener who wasn't, you know, especially in Nirvana, would hear. Like, you'd hear the hits, you'd hear the unplugged stuff, but what they are is a punk band that could play poppy stuff, really. You know, it's kind of like if you only heard Master of Puppets, Injustice for All, and Ride the Lightning, and then you listen to Reload or something like that, you'd be like, well, this doesn't sound like Metallica, but it is.
Sure.
Like, there's two
parts. It's the evolving of the band. Yeah. Same with the Stones or Kiss or any band that's been around for a long time. You have that evolving. That's why, once again, had Cobain survived, would Nirvana have survived? Probably not. But I still think he would have continued writing, and they probably would have reunited a million times. But where would he have gone with his music? He'd probably be doing like some kind of EDM electronica shit now, just because it would piss people off. You know what I mean?
I remember, this might just be fan theory or something, but I remember reading something about he had started to listen to more of Grohl's stuff and started to say, like, oh, we should write some stuff together, which is what everyone, like, oh my God, imagine if they did. Like, it'd be like Foo Fighters and Nirvana combined. But
which might not be a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, like, once he had Cobain not, you know, done what he did and, you know, killed himself, or however the politically correct way of saying it, we might never have had Foo Fighters.
Yeah, and that's why the police fought, is because everything that Sting brought forward, it was just, even Copeland admit, like, it was just better. Like,
and he said, why should I be confined to a three-piece rock band when I can have 12-piece and write all this other crazy stuff? Yeah. That was kind of Sting's, you know, once again, talking about great power trios. I mean, Sting's bass line in the Police is amazing. But, I mean, Cass, what's your favorite song on Nevermind, your favorite song on...
Favorite song on Nevermind, Something in the Way.
Uh-huh.
And then on In Utero, it's a close tie between All Apologies and Dumb.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Rob?
That's really hard. I'm going to say in Utero, I'll say All Apologies. Nevermind, I can't say Teen Spirit because you just can't choose that one.
Although in reality, it's probably the best tune on the
record. Yeah, but we're too cool, so man. We know too much
about
it.
And it's just, you know, by the first year it was out, you heard it 30,000 times.
You know,
times.
I just figured out about 3 years ago, it's a libido, a mosquito, an albino, and a wino. Or the other one.
What?
What's the lyric? And it's a libido, mosquito, albino,
something. I can't think.
But you, just as we're looking it up, I saw Nirvana get inducted into the Hall of Fame, and they had Joan Jett was playing guitar and singing. And dude, I'll tell you what, man, it was so good. It, just the fact that they used her, but it was so good, man. Like, it just fit perfectly, like the punk rock
Not
vibe of
that,
them, you know?
I think
I have the lyrics here.
I have a vague memory of Cobain being into women's
rights. Yeah. And I think that's why they chose her.
I remember reading somewhere that they wanted PJ Harvey, but they couldn't get her. And then Grohl and Novoselic said, wait, this needs to be all women. That's why they had
St. Vincent, Lordy.
And was there someone else?
Lordy. And Lord, then Joan Jett.
Joan Jett, yeah.
So what is the cast? Lay it on us.
This first word, do you have it there?
Yeah, I got it.
Mulatto?
I'll let you read it.
Yeah, it's a mulatto. An albino, a mosquito, my libido, yeah.
I just figured that out about 3 years ago. I'm going to go with All Apologies and Rape Me, and I'll go with Lithium and Teen Spirit. So,
Teen Spirit.
Well, yeah, come on, man. Yeah. You know you've made it when Weird Al Yankovic does a parody of your song.
Yeah.
Oh, dudes, thank you very much, man. Classic album Clash. Is it everything you thought it would be, Cass?
Everything I thought it would be. And I'm still going to keep searching for that perfect album. I got to find one.
That'll be the next one.
Yeah, I have to find one.
Thanks, boys.
Thanks a lot.
All right, thanks to Big Cass and Rob for taking part in the Nirvana Classic Album Clash. And if you have a suggestion for a future Classic Album Clash, hit me up on the Twitter at Talk Is Jericho. And remember, tell me which one you like better. Do you like Nevermind better? Do you like In Utero better? Tell me some of your thoughts and some of your ideas, and maybe I'll read some back for you next week right here in Talk Is Jericho. And thanks once again to Big Cass. Hopefully he'll be back in the WWE very soon, recuperating from a major injury. I think he is almost ready to make his big return. And thanks once again to Rob, who runs the Hard Knock South Big Gym in Land O'Lakes, Florida. If you want to know more, go to Instagram at Hard Knocks South, HardNocksSouth, or go to www.mogy.me to learn more about Hard Knocks South. It is for you, man. And speaking of being for you, I'll tell you something else that's for you if you like good rock and roll. Fozzy on the Judas Rising 2018 tour. We started up again yesterday in Milwaukee. Tonight, Wednesday, March 28th, we're in Chicago at the Bottom Lounge. The VIP for that is sold out, but tickets are still available. March 29th, Grand Rapids, Michigan at the Intersection. March 30th, Detroit, Michigan at the Shelter. That's sold out. March 31st, Dayton, Ohio at the Rockstar Energy Arena. That is sold out. April 2nd, Cleveland House of Blues. April 3rd, Pittsburgh at Jurgles. April 4th, Clifton Park at the Upstate Concert Hall. April 5th, New York City at the Gramercy. April 6th, Philadelphia at the Foundry. That is sold out. April 7th, Portland, Maine at the Aura. The VIP for that is sold out. April 8th, Hampton Beach, New Hampshire at Wally's. Get your tickets at FozzyRock.com. Get your VIP packages at FozzyRock.com. Come meet me and the rest of Fozzy. Come see a private meet and greet, a private mini concert just for you, playing songs we're not going to be playing later on in the night. We'll take pictures with you, sign your stuff. It's one of the best VIP programs in the business. Also on top of that, remember, April 8th is WrestleMania Sunday. If you come see Fozzy, it's an early show, and then we'll be done by the time the pre-show starts. And then I'll come out and watch WrestleMania with you with the rest of Fozzy. That's April 8th. Do that. All information at FozzyRock.com. Also bringing the Words of Jericho back to the UK in the spring. Tickets still available for Glasgow on the 21st and London on the 23rd. Manchester is sold out on the 22nd. Get your tickets, your final tickets at insidetheropes.co.uk. And of course, it's still not too late to buy your cabin now for Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea. We set sail October 27th from Miami to the Bahamas and back. And for as low as $150, you can book your cabin at ChrisJerichoCruise.com. And remember, once you book the cabin, your price includes everything. All the concerts, comedy shows, live podcasts, meet and greets, autograph signings, Ring of Honor, a Sea of Honor tournament, all of that stuff free of charge with your cabin reservation. Your food is included as well. All you got to pay for are alcohol and gambling. But remember, you'll get to hang out with everybody, including me, and this incredible lineup of guests. More guests have been added this week. Cheeseburger is going to be there from Ring of Honor. Deonna Purrazzo is going to be there. Also, Jim Ross, Jerry the King Lawler, SoCal Val, Mick Foley. Mick's daughter, Noelle Foley, has just been added to the lineup. She's going to host some stuff for us. Ricky the Dragon, Steamboat, Rey Mysterio, Raven, the Keeping It 100 crew, Conan, Disco Inferno, and Shane Helms. Beyond the Darkness, Tim and Dave will be scaring the pants off you. Colt Cabana and Marty DeRosa doing the Unprofessional Wrestling Show. That's hilarious. Don Callis and Paul Lazenby doing Killing the Town Live. Brad Williams, Ron Funch is making you laugh. Busted Open Radio, Dave LaGreca is going to be there. Corey Taylor is going to be there doing a special acoustic set. He's just been added to the lineup, the singer of Slipknot and Stone Sour. Phil Campbell and the Bastard Sons. Fozzy's going to be playing three shows. I'm going to be doing my own Words of Jericho show just for the cruise. King is going to be there. The Stir, the Dave Spivak Project. Go watch Get Out of My House on his YouTube channel now. It's a great song and a great video. The Cherry Bombs, the Darlings of Rock and Roll. Shoot to Thrill, the best female AC/DC cover band in the world. Blizzard of Ozzy, the world's best Aussie cover band in the world. Of course, the Pièce de Résistance, Ring of Honor, presenting the Sea of Honor tournament aboard the ship. Matches happening in the middle of the ocean, and the winner of the Sea of Honor tournament gets a Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Championship shot in the future. Kenny Omega is going to be there. Young Bucks will be there. That's three-fourths of what people are saying is one of the greatest matches of all time. They just had it in Long Beach with New Japan. Kenny's going to be on the cruise. The Young Bucks will be there, Matt and Nick Jackson. The Villain, Marty Scurll. The Briscoe Brothers, Dalton Castle, Frankie Kazarian, Adam Page, Chris Daniels, Jay Lethal, Delirious, The American Nightmare, Cody Rhodes, one of the biggest heels in the business, one of the biggest stars in the business. Cody's wife, Brandy's going to be there. Deonna Purrazzo is going to be there. A Cheeseburger is going to be there. And we still got more names coming. The list keeps on growing. So many cool things happening. If you don't want to go on this cruise, if you like wrestling and rock and roll and you don't go on this cruise, well, then you're just a stupid idiot. Go to ChrisJerichoCruise.com and book your cabin now. All right, coming up on Friday, Howard Jones returns to Talk is Jericho. He's got a great new band called Light the Torch. We'll hear all about that. A few stories about Killswitch Engage. What happened to the devil you know? My Christian metal buddy, Howard Jones, is going to be there. My fellow Winnipegger is going to be here on Friday. Howard Jones, he is hilarious. You're going to love him. If you heard him before, you know how great he is. If you haven't heard him, stay tuned. You're going to love it. In the meantime, in the between time, stay hard, stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy.